You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we're coming to you live from Studio City, California. And you can catch our show every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show is about informative entertainment, and we do it in a fun, upbeat style. And we are going to provide you with tips, advice, and resource information on how you too can pursue a career in show business or regular business. We have guests that are in various professions in the entertainment industry, and actually we're expanding now into the corporate aspect. So that means basically that we're going to have somebody at some point in time from a career that interests you. So you're going to have to listen to the show every week just to find out. And if you want to know who's going to be on our show in the future, you can visit our official website, which is questionreality.us, not .com, questionreality.us. And if you want to check out any of our past guests, read their bios, and listen and download any of the shows, you want to go to the LA Talk Radio website directly. You want to go to latalkradio.com. It should be where you are now if you're listening, so you're halfway there. You click on the Schedule 1 link, which is at the top of the LA Talk Radio website. You look for our show, which is Question Reality, and it should be in the time slot of Sunday at 5, and you just click the link, and that'll take you directly to our archive page. And on the archive page, you can peruse the who we've had. We've had Tony Emmy Award winners, Tony Award winners, you name it, we've had everything. So just go down the list. You will find someone that you will definitely want to listen to that will help you. And you can also download us on from the podcast section on iTunes. And from what I hear via an email, and I haven't confirmed it yet, but I do believe we are going to be getting a special iPhone application for LA Talk Radio. So I haven't heard anything more about that, but I did get an email on that. So that's very exciting for us. And we would love to have you call in and ask questions and provide any comments on any guest from the show, but we ask that you call between 5:20 and 5:30. That way, the guest has time to acclimate. And when you call in, we take your calls directly. You don't have to go through a screening process, so keep that in mind. Now, the number that you would call is right there. It should be right in front of you underneath my cute little face. The call-in number is 323-203-0815, and it's right underneath. If you're listening to me now, it's right underneath. So you just click that little button, and there you go, and call us up. Now, we have a fantastic guest for you today, as we do every single week, and we're going to be talking to him in a couple minutes, but his name is Matt Scalarud, and he is the president of I love the name of this company, and I am going to find out where he came to name this company this, but Pink Banana Media, is that a name for a company or what? I love it. I love it. I love it as much as those Pink Dot stores. He was referred to me by our wonderful Stephen Levine from Grapevine Public Relations Agency, and we are going to talk to him a little bit about what he's doing in the world, because he is just blazing the trail. He is just tearing it up. And you're going to have to wait a couple minutes to talk to him about what he's doing. Now, I want to tell you about some exciting stuff going on. Our wonderful little people at Delray Beach Film Festival in Florida, Delray Beach. This is your last chance to sign up for their Celebrity Golf Scramble. That is happening on Tuesday, this Tuesday, March 23rd at 9 a.m., and you can win a Mercedes. This is being sponsored by Mercedes-Benz of Delray Beach. And there's a lot of raffles and prizes. And it's like a steal. It's $99, not even $100, $99. And that gets you lunch, it gets you a round of golf, and a free ticket to the DBFF, which is the Delray Beach Film Festival. And this is a charitable donation. And if you want to go, you can still RSVP right now. So grab a pen and paper. I forget to tell people, when you listen to my show, always have a pen and paper, because there's always some kind of great event that I'm going to be announcing. So if you don't have a pen, get your lipstick out. That's what I used to do in the 80s. Okay, so the phone number is 877-733-3032. Again, 877-733-3032. Or you can visit their website, which is D as in dog, B as in boy, F as in Frank, .us. .us. So that should be a lot of fun. There's going to be celebrities there. You can go to the website and find out which celebrities are going to be there, but you can't beat that for a $99 fee. So that sounds exciting. Now, there is, I know you guys were familiar with a game show in the 70s called Let's Make a Deal. Who didn't love that? Well, it is back. I don't know if any of you people realize this, but it is back, being hosted by one of my favorite people, Wayne Brady, and it's on CBS. You can email me, but basically, I'm telling you this because the show has been taping at the Tropicana in Las Vegas, but for 5 weeks, they're taping live in Los Angeles, and they're doing it right now. It started on March the 18th in Hollywood, and all contestants are chosen from the audience. As you know, you come there, you wear a costume, you can win a car, vacation, computer, furniture, tons of cash, or you can walk out of there with a goat. I'm just telling you, you can win just a simple can of soup. I was watching it one time recently, and these people passed up three curtains and ended up with a car that was from a wrecking lot. It was just horrible. But, you know, that's the risk. If you want to know how you can get free tickets to be on that show, email me at Priscilla, P-R-I-S-C-I-L-L-A, Priscilla at questionreality.us. Priscilla at questionreality.us. And again, that's Let's Make a Deal on CBS, hosted by Wayne Brady. Another exciting thing, Jeannie Diva. She is an international celebrity voice and performance coach. She is having a Vocal Breakthrough Singers Workshop. It's Saturday, March 27th at 1 o'clock. It goes from 1 to 4 o'clock. And it is at a place called More Art, Inc. And that's at 10667 White Oak Avenue in Granada Hills. Let me give you the phone number, 818-428-1377. It's $40 in advance, $45 at the door, cash, check, credit cards, you name it. If you want to pay for it on the internet, jeanniediva.com, JeanniediVa.com. And if you don't know who Jeannie Diva is, she has been seen on E! Entertainment TV with the Backstreet Boys, Nick Carter. She's been on American Idol, Idol Chat on the TV Guide channel. She's endorsed by Fleetwood Mac, Rolling Stones, Amy Winehouse, Elton John, you name it. And some of her clients include Grammy Award winner, American Idol finalist, members of the Jay Giles Band, Foghat, Linda Carter, you name it, Celine Dion, Stevie Wonder, Christina Aguilera, Janet Jackson, blah, 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 blah. The list goes on and on and on. She is the originator of the Diva Method, which is complete vocal technique for stage and studio. She's also the author of Contemporary Vocalist. It's an internationally acclaimed book and CD series combination, and it gives you the Diva Method vocal warm-ups and cool-downs. It's a fantastic book. When I went through my I want to be a singer phase, this was what helped me. I was actually able to sing a tune and I didn't go out of pitch, which is usually my problem. I usually do sound like a Peking cat with a tail being sliced and chopped, but I did not when I followed this method. Unfortunately, my phase with wanting to sing moved on, so I did not continue with that. But had I would have been up there shaking it like Shakira right now. So check that out, GenieDiva.com. Last thing I want to tell you about, very exciting. A friend of mine owns a company called BlankSpaces.com. It is on Wilshire Boulevard in LA. It is the coolest company ever because what they have a huge space that they actually rent out these little corporate spaces. And it's absolutely perfect for people who are in the entertainment business who want to have quick meetings, like if you're a writer or if you're an actor and you want to have a meeting. If you are just anything you can think of, any reason, a real estate agent, a person, if you don't have an office and you need to have an office, or if you need to have, this is a place that you definitely want to call. Gorgeous, modern facility. You got to check it out, blankspaces.com. Ask for Jerome Chang. Tell him I referred you because this is awesome. One of the things that he started was having all of these different business people having their events and hosting things there, which is what I'm about to tell you. This is called Breaking Into Event Planning. So on March 24th, which is this Wednesday, from 6:45 to 9:45, Blank Spaces, it's at 5405 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles. It's $65, and if you ever wanted to learn how to break into event planning, you want to learn how to execute flawless events, there is a woman that is going to be hosting it. Her website is snapproductions.com, and if you don't know what event planning is, but it's very important, it's an integral component of marketing and public relations. It really is. And events, kind of, as everybody knows, they have the power to impact consumer awareness and your perception of brands. So, you know, fundraising, they have production. I guess, you know, with event planning, you know, it's from production, launches, fundraising, galas, and then, you know, effective events can help your brands and organization achieve their goals. So you definitely need to know something if you are in the business world. I feel that everybody should know how to throw an event because not everybody's going to have money to be able to hire an event planner. So I think it's a great idea to just go and get some ideas and plan your own event. Because starting out, you know, you have to do everything yourself. But event planning is more than just throwing a good party. You know, each production takes months of planning and strategy. And this seminar, from what I hear, they basically review the stages of event planning from conception to development. So I would imagine that you're going to definitely learn, like, the different types of events, you know, maybe some of the goals and objectives, I would think. I know you'll probably get tips for a successful event, because who wouldn't include that? And I would imagine all the essential production documents, maybe, because you got to have some production reports and timelines and budgets and stuff. So I'm telling you, I would definitely check it out. If you are in business and you want to expand, you should take an event planning class. And I took many of them in the inception of my deciding what to be phase. And this was one of the things I really enjoyed. And we're talking way back in the late 80s. So, and I would imagine it's gotten even better today. And again, the instructor is Ginger Campbell of Snap Productions. So check that out. So we are finished with all of our advertisers. Yay! Yay for Matt! Yay for Matt! All right. Now, Matthew Scalarud, yes, again, is the president of Pink Banana Media. Now, Pink, you say, what is Pink Banana? Some of these, I just automatically hear, oh, what is Pink Banana Media? Well, Pink Banana Media, this is a company, and if I'm wrong, Matthew will correct me, and I encourage him to do so, but it is a company, from the information that I got, that helps other companies reach gays and lesbians on the internet using traditional means such as banner ads and email, as well as they have more specialized means, which would be including blogs and YouTube videos, Facebook, and I would imagine maybe MySpace and a whole bunch more that I don't know about. And Matthew began his career in the GLBT marketplace in the mid-90s. Now, This was a time when there weren't too many companies that catered to the GLBT community or their needs, basically, to go forth and flourish in this country. So Matthew, from what I understand, has become a trailblazer and a trendsetter in this field. And we love trailblazers and trendsetters. So he is our little pioneer. And that's who we're going to talk today to, a pioneer. Matthew, are you there?
I am right here.
I didn't put you to sleep. I didn't lull you into a sleep with all my advertisement sing-songy voice stuff.
Not at all. That's been actually quite entertaining.
So we are talking to a trailblazer. Now, I got so many emails when I posted that you were going to be on the show, and I had 15 questions, but I always like to start with my favorite question, and it just seems so obvious, but there's a reason that one asked this question, because people often change their idea. There are people that know what they want to be when they're in the womb, and I'm just always amazed at those people. It's like, I knew I wanted to be a rocket scientist. I mean, just know. But, you know, most people, most of us, we go through different phases when we're little. What do you want to be? I want to be a fireman. I want to be a doctor. I want to be this. So my question to you, and then by the time you're an adult or the end of your life cycle, you may have gone through many different careers. So my first question is going to be obvious. What did little Matthew want to be when he grew up? From the earliest time you can remember, what did you want to be? Isn't that a good question?
I wanted to be a Top Gun pilot.
See? Yay! That was normal. Okay, we know you're normal. All right.
Yes, I was very male, very much a boy when I was growing up.
So that's what you wanted to be. And then once you started high school and you were deciding on what to major in college, did you go through many ideas of what would be the perfect career for you?
No. It was at a certain point, and even in somewhere around high school, I found out that I'm slightly colorblind, which meant that I couldn't fly airplanes. And so it ruled that out. However, I was always kind of that geeky kid that was always good at math and science and so forth. So I got my degree in aerospace engineering. So when you talk about being a rocket scientist, that's what I trained and studied to learn.
Oh, my God. See, there's another one of my psychic connections. Son of a biscuit eater. I don't know how I do it. I just amazed myself. I didn't even know that. Wow. I was going to say cowboy. But,
oh, yeah, I wish. But no, I was a little rocket scientist and went and started my life in that direction.
Oh, my God. So you actually got your degree and you pursued a career. You were actually working in the field.
Oh, yeah. It's ironic, though. It's funny that, for some people in life, and my parents especially, they thought, oh, you know, that's great. Now you've got a career for the rest of your life and that should be what you do. And I got bored really quick. After a few years, I thought, I studied to work in an environment that's this mundane, and there's got to be something better out there.
Right, as most of us do. And that's what I want to bring out, Matt, because you ended up finding your dream career. And a lot of people, especially younger people, they're pressured by their parents to be a doctor or a lawyer or the typical thing. And they do want to listen to their parents, because I would imagine that little Matthew was a wonderful kid who loved his parents and wanted to please them like we all do. So you kind of wanted to make sure that you fulfilled that obligation, and that is so much pressure. Now, my question is, once you did that, you got in the field, what was it that, I know you said it was mundane, but how long did you work in that field before you couldn't take it anymore? And during this process, while you're thinking, oh my God, I could be doing something else, were you having thoughts of what else you could do? And what was the final straw to take you, to get you out of there?
Yeah. Well, I was noticing that the salespeople in our company, I was helping them quite often, and just because I was the low man on the totem pole, and ended up helping them with some of their clients. And I just started thinking, as we all do, I thought, I kind of enjoy doing that, and I think I can do it better than them. And they drive better cars than we do. So I decided to actually go into sales of what I was working on in the whole engineering world.
Ooh.
So, but that's what allowed me to eventually, when the internet kicked in and came along, and I started dabbling with that. It was those skills that actually just allowed me to make this work, because I was comfortable in the technology, and mm-hmm. had kind of grown up with computers, not so much when I was a kid, but grew up with them in work. And so I was able to combine that comfort with and love of programming with the mutual love of going out and selling and marketing and talking to clients. So I kind of put two and two together, and next thing I know, it was working on the internet.
Do you see that, people? Do you hear what Matthew just said? That you don't necessarily, he was very smart. He didn't just say, oh, this company and this job is mundane. I'm out of here. Watch my dust, people. No, he was very smart. He looked at other jobs within the company he already worked, and he said, how can mm-hmm. I work another job within the company and utilize the company to my advantage that works better with my skill set? Do you see what Matthew did there? He didn't just say, oh, you know, kiss this company goodbye. He gave it one last shot and used it to his benefit. Matthew, I love that you brought that up. That is wonderful, because, you know, a lot of people just say, this job isn't for me, to hell with it, and they don't even explore other aspects of a job just because they don't like one job that they're in. Tell us, how important was it? Because had you not pursued that career in sales, you might have taken a whole different path or something. Am I right?
Oh, yeah, because I would have never had the confidence to just, you know, it's not so much in sales, you're not just picking up the phone and cold calling, you're just picking up the phone and talking to people about solutions and helping them. And once I've learned how to do that at the technical level, in specifically technical sales, that's why I loved being able to do that online as well, because it was the same explanation, same technology, which is just you know, there's this complicated thing that people didn't quite understand. At the time it was the web, but before that it was I was actually in lasers and laser research and all that, and people just didn't quite understand it, but they wanted to.
Yeah, and you really use that to your benefit, so I'm so glad that you brought that up. I really am. Now, I read in your bio that in 1995, so you're doing the sales thing. I don't know what time period that was, but I read that in 1995 you launched a website called gaywire.com. However, when I went to pull it up to check it out, it's now listed as unzip.net. So is this the new name, and if so, what was the reason for the name change?
Oh no, I've sold everything to another company. So having sold it, so they've taken that and they just they don't have Gaywired up online anymore, and so they just redirected over to Unzip now. So
okay,
unfortunately,
was that the first company that you launched, Gaywired, or is that, you know?
That was it. We started even before Planet Out and Gay.com were out, and we were just trying to put together some sort of site that. You know, there were gay resources out there, but they were very, this was when the internet really was kind of ugly and Yahoo was just trying to get started. And so everything was very text-based and you could kind of dig around and find things, but it was rather hard. So we said, well, why don't we just kind of come up with some way of, for gay people to be able to find gay resources that are out there. And I can just say that it, you know, we didn't know where things were going to go, but one thing led to another. And next thing you know, we're kind of creating this entire community site and had all these, you know, sections based on travel and entertainment. And it was just all the resources that were there. But then we're starting to work with gay magazines and gay hotels and putting them all up online, and it just kind of had a life of its own.
Wow. So the traffic, what was the traffic like in 1995? I mean, how being new and just getting started, how did you gauge what the traffic was like and who you were hitting mm-hmm. and how did you do that?
Well, since we were starting out at zero, and of course back then the ways to analyze web traffic was much, much more rudimentary than it is today.
Mm-hmm.
And we just simply, you know, you could tell based on server statistics and all that, how you're doing, but basically it's the feedback you're getting from your users
mm-hmm.
and you start getting emails. I mean, I remember the first time within a month and we got an email from someone that met their future partner right there from our site online. So from that, we kind of knew we were onto something. You know, you just start to realize that you are impacting more and more lives and you start to see more and more people using it, and it's just sort of, you don't know where it's going to go.
Wow. So you had a whole bunch of different things on the website. So you were touching a bunch of different types of information. Like, what were some of the things that you had on GayWire.com that you think were essential to launching you to the next aspect of the website?
Yeah. Well, travel became very important. So, and then ultimately over the years, travel advertisers became one of our strongest supporters. And I would probably say entertainment was next. So entertainment and travel were two very strong areas. But on top of all that, what we actually did is we started one of the first e-commerce sites where we actually started making it so we can sell gay products online, directly online, and process the credit cards right there. And that was a really big deal because this was really just barely getting started. And there were no real gay retailers at that time. So it was like, say, August 96. We started launching, we had the products available, but next thing you know, we started getting more and more orders because Christmas was coming along. And I can tell you that whole little e-commerce adventure turned into a huge part of our business as we just started. We found out from that first Christmas that there's really something to it. And we actually ended up working with a lot of other companies in the gay market, like TLA Video and 10% Productions, to actually show them how to do it as well.
Wow. Oh, my God. Well, I tell you, I think that covered the first question that I was going to go into. I think I read Lisa's mind. We had a question from Lisa in Detroit, Michigan, and she said, I know that when you started your business, there probably wasn't a roadmap for how to approach the GLT community online. What were some of the things initiated in your company's infancy that you feel broadened the GLBT market? Did we cover that in your last statement?
Yeah.
Or can you pretty much, then I'm going to add to that. There was no roadmap to do things online, what were some of the various concepts, you know, that you started testing, you know, like maybe some back-end stuff or, you know, what were some of the systems that you got up?
Yeah, it's true, and that's what that's what even applies today. It's not that people that are nobody sees the future. You can just, all you do is you kind of watch trends, and you can start to get a sense of where things could go. Mm-hmm. And so what we were doing without a roadmap is just trying to figure out where could things go. And so e-commerce was one we had no idea what kind of can of worms we were opening up in a good way, as far as just finding out that wow, there was a whole pent up demand in the country for people to be able to have access to. And music CDs and all sorts of gay calendars, especially calendars were a top seller. You just didn't have access to them before. Mm-hmm. So that was something we just learned without a map. And then the other piece was that we also found out people wanted to meet. And that, you know, way before social networking and even before, like I said, gay.com and some of them were kind of getting people to, finding ways to get people to connect and hook up. We used to actually, we created a system that tied in with, and some of your audience won't know what this is, and the others will laugh, but we made a system that tied in with what's called ICQ. And ICQ was before AOL's it was the first instant messenger program out there. And what we did is we tied it in so that basically we made like a gay ICQ directory. So anybody who was using ICQ that was gay, they can come on our site and find each other. And next thing you know, that took off like crazy. So that showed us that, wow, there's really a model here for kind of matchmaking or just people being able to find friends and other gay people. And between that and the e-commerce, those two areas just really took off over the years.
Now, I heard that you helped get TLA Video and 10% Productions started with their first online e-commerce sites. Now, what is TLA Video? I'm not sure.
Oh, TLA is one of the biggest, they're one of the biggest online retailers for gay and lesbian video out of Philadelphia. And they do a great job. And so, but we had started with them. We actually put their products online, and then I knew they'd eventually bring it in-house. So we actually worked with them and their programmers to kind of adapt and develop some of the things that we had learned and be able to make it so that they could do that as well.
Mm. And what's 10% Productions? What type?
Oh, they're no longer there, but they used to be very strong at the time with calendars and greeting cards, and but they're very strong in the gay community on that side of life.
Companies, when you initially started that you were involved with, what percentage would you say are still around today based on how you helped them with their online business?
Yeah, I would say well over 50% are still there, but there's still quite a few that were smaller retailers or vendors that had, especially pride items. I will say that most of the companies I used to work with that did little rainbow flag thingies of all shapes and sizes. they don't seem to be around as much, but that might also speak to the fact that maybe the gay community feels less of a need to be waving or putting little rainbow stickers on their car and maybe evolve to another level.
Okay. This question comes from Pamela Boca Raton. She said, in your type of business, you obviously test many boundaries. What do you feel has been your most exploratory approach to date, and what was the outcome? Good question, Pamela.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of all the boundaries. In some ways, especially when you're in the gay community, we almost you push everything.
Right.
If it's in the gay, really specifically, the boundaries we push, but also we had to learn from advertisers. Was always, you always have to be careful of number one, how much skin do you ever show on the website, and also when you allow members to be able to then meet each other and set a profile, how much skin and what do you allow them to do? So we were able to kind of come up with a good balance that made it so that we were able to keep good national advertisers on board, yet at the same time, not alienate our community by making ourselves so Main Street USA that all the boys were in pinstripe suit and ties and all the girls had little bonnets on, you know what I mean?
Right.
We tried to make it so that the gays and lesbians that were presenting themselves on our site could present themselves as they wanted to be, whether it was lesbians with crazy piercings or gay men shirtless. But we also found that there was like certain limits we could enforce that still allowed the larger advertisers to stay on board, which was really a key.
Right. Of course, so if someone dressed up like Little Bo Peep, hey, that would be all right too. I mean, that's all right with that. He'll post your Little Bo Peep photo if that's what you're into, I would imagine. This question comes from Chad from San Francisco, and he says, dear Matt, what have been some of the obstacles in the path of your business? For example, a friend was telling me that anti-gay activists actually try to hack into GLBT websites and cause them to crash. Is this true?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's true now, but I know that over the years we have experienced that as well. And those things of course become major issues in terms of technology. Is you're always trying to keep up with technology, and yet there's always somebody that's on the other side that's always trying to stay one step ahead of you. So as long as you know their target, you're fine. But all of us have been probably a target at one time or another.
I just can't believe that. I mean, it's bad enough we got, people still, I don't know what these people do. Who has time to be out there writing all these viruses? Isn't that insane? I mean, why, if you are smart enough to create a virus to bring down Microsoft, what the hell? I mean, can't you find something else more productive to do? Come on, do something, write a program that's going to be beneficial to mankind. Why would somebody spend all day figuring out how to crash, a business? It's just amazing
that's
to me. But,
that's
how the mind
works. No, I'm sorry.
Matt, I don't understand it. This world is just made up of so many people. And, we call them wackos, but, everybody thinks everybody else is weird. That is what we have to understand about ourselves as society. If we don't understand someone, somebody's going to be calling us weird, too. We're weirdos to somebody, so we call them weirdos. We may be a weirdo, too. Okay, this comes from Emilio from Palm Beach. He says, dear Matt, you have been featured in many articles on websites and in magazines such as gay.com, planetout.com, and am I correct that you were also featured in the marketplace section of the Wall Street Journal? Wow. Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow, he must be a big fan. He knows everything about you, doesn't he? Way to go, Emilio!
Yeah, no, we were very happy about that. I was think 98 or 99, and we were featured in the front page of Marketplace with pictures, the little Wall Street Journal's black and white version of pictures of our website and everything.
Wow.
It was quite exciting. It was an exciting time.
And that's pretty big stuff to get to the Wall Street Journal. Was it the total succession of everything that someone said, hey, you know, this guy's done this, that, or was it one thing that really sparked and they got hold of it and said, hey, he's doing this, let's find out about
it? Actually, the reality is that the dot-com craze was still going on at that time, so almost everything dot-com oriented was excitable. Everybody wanted to hear about it and write about it. And so basically, once the Wall Street Journal wanted to go a little more cutting edge and take a look at what's going on in the gay community, that's where we were. So that was we were just in the right place at the right time in terms of being kind of gay pioneers in this whole dot-com space. And they found it was really a compelling story, so it was kind of exciting.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's for sure. Now, this question comes from William from Red Bank, New Jersey. Oh, Lord, did I have some good times in Red Bank in the 80s. Red Bank, New Jersey, in the house. He says, dear Matt, at this point in time, do you take on a mix of helping small businesses and big businesses?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What I actually do, I found a nice little formula that works. I have some pretty fun clients, some good clients, like even the tourism folks at Sweden, and I help them use online media just to help find gay people and get them excited about traveling to Sweden. But that's on the large side, and then from there, when I all the rules that apply, all the tools, the tricks, everything that we do, I actually do a lot of presentations and seminars and workshops, and from there. I do a lot of educating to small businesses so that they can actually walk away and do a lot of it themselves as well. So if they, some small companies will hire me to do that, but in general, a lot of them will just go away and give them all the tools to be able to do all of it on their own. And they're quite appreciative of that.
That is so weird that we went into that. I did not put these questions in order, and I'm reading the next question from Brad in Miami, and he says, dear Matt, can you give us an example of how your company could help a small business grow and a big business?
Yeah, and that's especially because everything that I'm, you know, now we're, you know, fast forwarding to, you know, I've sold everything with Gay Wired and all the other sites I had created, and now that I'm able to kind of focus on just helping companies reach gay people on the internet. Mm-hmm. I get to focus more on the fun areas, which is, of course, Facebook and blogs and Twitter and all that good stuff. But that's where a lot of the eyeballs have gone. So in essence, that's where that's the area that I'm working with, whether it's large companies or small, and the rules pretty much apply equally across the board. And the real trick is that small businesses jump to it. Yeah.
Matt, I am sorry, but I left this part out. He like spaced down 10 times, so I didn't see that. He said, the reason I'm asking is I just started my own, a couple years ago, I just started my own real estate business, and it's not going too well. Can you help me? Can you give me some tools to help the small business grow? So I should have included that, but it was way down underneath that. So I guess that's why he's asking, give us an example of how your company could help a small business grow. So let's take real estate. If somebody said, hey, Matt, how can you help my business grow? I just started working in real estate as a real estate agent, which is not a bright idea now, but so come on, Brad, I love you, but come on, a couple years ago, I think you started right when the economy fell. But then again, I bought a lot of land when the economy fell, so I'm not critiquing it. All right, so why don't we help Brad with that?
Yeah, well, actually, there'd be two directions I would go. Number one, if it was somebody just getting started out and very open to just learning the basics, because again, most of my area of trying to help anybody out is starting with social media and using that to, because all that stuff works towards improving your search engine placement on Google, and in general, just really helps people be able to find your site. But that said, you know, it'd be great and easy to say, let's do a Facebook fan page, connect it all up to Twitter. Get a blog in there that kind of feeds into all that as well. And that's what I do, is I try to help clients put all those pieces together. But you're going to laugh, because the real area after, you know, I'd say, okay, once we get these pieces in place and we follow some basic rules, we're set. But in this day and age, there's going to be, over the next few years, there's going to be so many really good social network marketers or just companies that can, or people that can help or small businesses kind of promote themselves online. They're going to differentiate. You're going to actually find more and more organizations and people and small groups that can help specifically realtors or accountants or lawyers and really specialize in that field. And I will tell you, I'm meeting people even here, I've been at an expo here in New York, and I am meeting people that are focusing on social media and the world of real estate. And those are the people I would actually go to, because they're really, they've decided that they want to be the best at helping realtors really do their, put their best foot forward in the world of online and be able to find their clients and find, and having access to, you know, finding in those types of individuals and being able to work with them is going to actually be the very best that almost any small business can do.
Excellent.
Yeah, it sounds tricky. It's tricky because the answer is not sitting right out there, but the answer is developing. And I'm watching every day more and more people come up, put up a little shop, a little shingle out front and say, yep, this is what we do. And they're realizing, wow, I'm good at it. And I can actually help people and make a living at the same time.
So do you feel that, this is my question, do you feel that all of these social networking sites like Facebook and MySpace and I can't think of any Twitter, do you really think that they're having, are they in the inception of taking over the normal traditional ways of marketing, spending money? Say, for example, our dollars used to go to a magazine, a newspaper. Is this where we should be focusing now? Are you talking about having the fan page, but on the right side, for example, of Facebook, those little tiny advertisements?
Yeah, I always advocate for both. Yeah, that's at the end of the day, that's becoming some of the very most effective forms of advertising. It's where the eyeballs are at. You know, right now, Facebook is probably at about 450 million users worldwide and growing. So the eyeballs are there, and they're spending a lot of time in that space. So I'm always trying to teach companies how to really learn how to speak with their potential clients as opposed to them. Speaking to them is like a quarter page print ad. That's a broadcast. You're speaking to somebody with no chance for them to speak back. But in the social media world, you can actually start speaking with your folks without actually preaching to them and get them to start talking back and talking with each other. So that's a big part. But the other piece, what you talked about with those Facebook ads, is just as valid. And when you run a Facebook ad where you're only paying when somebody clicks on your ad, and by the time you're done and you look at all your results and they give you all these statistics, you find out that you're paying, this is where it gets not too technical, but this gets into the details, you're paying maybe 25 cents or 50 cents CPM, cost per thousand ad impressions shown. Right. And how that compares to the banner ad world, which is about $10 CPM, just shows that the banner ad world is going to have to, it may go through a lot of the same things that the print world went through when banners came on the scene 10 years ago. So you're seeing kind of a transition from print having a tough time to now banner ads and even email campaigns having a tougher time, because more and more energy and attention is going towards these social media ads and social media marketing and that whole world where people are realizing we got to migrate over there, because no matter what we think or say, that's where the eyeballs are kind of going to.
Yeah, and we love them because they're not intrusive like those damn banner ads, which are on top of every email that we try to. I'm with Yahoo. Every time you go in there, there's like the big banner ad, and then it freezes your email because it has to switch. And I like how Facebook has them all in the little, you know, all on the little right hand side. I like that.
That's the future.
And what Facebook, I don't know who the geniuses are behind that, but they really did a great job with not being intrusive. And that's what these companies need to do. They cannot be intrusive on the social networkers' space. It's almost like it's very discreet. All the advertisements are on the right. They're beautifully placed. And we see them, and I click on them, but I will purposely not click on a banner ad if it's got all kinds of activity going on. I don't like the activity, you know, with the things bursting and all kinds of graphics going on. It's like I'll shut down my email because I don't want to see it. So that's another thing that people need to really understand. And I don't like MySpace. That just gives me a headache. That's just crazy. All right, I want to get these. It's 5:44. I want to make sure we get everything in. I have a question from I don't know if this is a guy or a girl, but I don't know what's going on, but Florida seems to love you. I think it's Tio, T-I-O. I don't know if that's a guy or a girl, but Tio from Miami again. And Tio says, can you give Matt, dear Matt, can you give the audience advice to, that doesn't make sense. Can you give, I'm going to just say us. Can you give us advice? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to change it because it's not written properly. So in my mind, I can't, you know, I'm going to translate. Okay. Can you give advice to anyone who may be struggling with their sexuality, coming to terms with who they are, and simultaneously trying to follow down the same path in business as you?
Oh, yeah, because that's always the tough one, especially when you're, you know, like, let's just say I'm at a business event and take photos and say, oh, I can't wait to post these on Facebook. And some of the people in conservative parts of the country will look a little squeamish and say, it'd be great if you didn't post those. We're not quite out in our community yet. So so when you deal with that, you know, of course, that whole comfort level is always a very personal thing. Everybody's got their own level of comfort and their own journey along that path. But I would just say that, you know, when it comes to business, it's if you are doing something that's openly gay out there in the business world, you have to be very comfortable on the personal side as well, because without that, I think it's not something you really get. I wouldn't say bashed, mentally bashed. I would say you don't get beat up and people picking on you in the business world based on that. Especially in this day and age, things are really improving a lot. But of course, mm-hmm. as we know, it's not there yet. So mm-hmm. It just has to be up to everybody's personal comfort level.
Amazing. I can't even believe people still think that way. Okay, this comes from Todd from Fire Island. What's going on with Florida? That's it. I'm going to focus all my attention in Florida now. It's Fire Island. I don't know. Isn't that Florida?
No,
Fire,
that's New York.
Oh, okay. All right, well... Wait a minute. You know I failed geography, right? All right. So it says, dear Matt, to be successful in your type of career, what are some of the characteristic traits do you feel one needs? That's a good question, because your personality really has to be, that is such a great question, because that's something I always tell people, and I believe in, your personality has to match your career. You cannot be in a career where your personality is completely at opposite ends of what you're doing. So you go ahead and take that question.
Yeah, I would say most importantly for anything that we do, and especially in this line of work, you just have to be very open. You can't have to be very, not just open-minded, but open to understanding and listening and trying to figure out what, you know, where people are at. And let's just say if I'm going to help somebody as a client, I have to be able to understand where their comfort level zone is at and what they're comfortable with in technology and so forth. So, I'm always trying to keep a very open mind as far as trying to adapt what I know to their level without ever sounding in any way condescending or trying to say, oh, don't you worry about this. We'll take care of it. People want to know.
Yeah.
So, but it's just the openness and understanding, because even when you're trying to help clients kind of move into the future, if you do more listening and you try to pay attention to what are other people you doing, and instead of just projecting what we think we do, projecting just our own selves into where things can go can kind of be a bit dangerous, because we're not we're not like everybody else, no matter how wonderful we all like to think we are. So if you pay attention and kind of watch and have that kind of sense of empathy in business for kind of watching how other people do things and how they react, you can start to really see where the trends are going and each individual's niche market or industry and so forth, and then be able to apply those to other clients so that they'd be able to also kind of stay a few steps ahead and hopefully take advantage of that opportunity.
Excellent. I tell you, you're not going to believe this, but it's 5:49 and we have 1 minute and I'm already in trouble, but I'm going to end this. We got 1 minute. Can you in 30 seconds tell me what are the exciting things on the horizon for you and your company? I don't know if you can do it in 30 seconds, Matt. I apologize, but go ahead.
No, it's just exciting. This whole social media stuff is growing up in a big way. And people are everybody's realizing that, wow, Facebook and then going in, tying it into Twitter and then making sure that you're putting your best foot forward in that space is actually helping companies in the world of search as well, which nobody knew is coming, because Google is integrating Twitter's into search. So knowing that social media and Google are all going to become best friends means, wow, there's a whole future in this space that everybody's starting to just become more and more aware of.
And you are the person to help everyone in the GLBT community. So if you have a small business, Matt is the one to help you get to the pinnacle of success. Am I right, Matt?
Absolutely.
All right. And you can reach Banana at pinkbananamedia.com. Pinkbananamedia.com. Matt, we're out of time. Did this not go fast or what?
It did. You just kept everything rolling along.
I'm a roller and a shaker. Matt, will you please do me the honor of promising that you're going to come back on the show?
I would love to.
Because I didn't get through all my questions. Now I got to send emails to these people telling them, sorry, I didn't get to your question, but Matt's coming back. So I can promise them you're coming back by the end of the year, right?
You got it.
Oh, thank you, Matt. Thank you to everybody listening. Have a great time. We'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye.
Do you usually have one too many cocktails? Feel bloated? Do you poop out at parties? If you answered yes to one or more of these questions, you need the Face-to-Face NYC Betty Ford Spa Treatment. Face-to-Face NYC is the only place you'll be able to get the Betty Ford Spa Treatment. This 12-step program was designed to energize and detoxify your entire body. The spa treatment begins with a 45-minute body-melting massage, followed by a 15-minute hot oil hair and scalp massage. You detoxify under a warm foil wrap, and the freshman facial is applied. You will be so relaxed, we may have to scrape you right off the table. And for a limited time, if you mentioned you heard about us from Priscilla Leona on Question Reality Radio, you will get a whopping 30% off the Betty Ford Spa Treatment. Face-to-Face NYC is located at 20 West 20th Street, Suite 603, New York City. Call us today at 212-633-0404 or visit our website at www.facetofacenyc.com for more details. That's 212-633-0404 or facetofacenyc.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.